The Athletic.
We sit comfortably, gentlemen. Hello and welcome to who talked in me backswing?
You said you're sitting comfortably, so I've answered.
It was rhetorical. Oh, right, okay. Well, let's start again. Are we ready?
No.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne, and coming up on this week's show. After four games unbeaten and 8 points from a possible 12, good old Newcastle United were back in familiar territory with a poor display and a 2-0 defeat to Arsenal. We'll look ahead to Leicester and beyond, talk about getting the best out of Miguel Almirón and others, and discuss what's next for Steve Bruce's men. We'll go back to May 1996 to relive that Kevin Keegan rant during an emotional and traumatic title run-in. And the quiz is back with a new format and no doubt lots for George and Chris to complain about, as I shall be asking the questions. But before we sneak up behind that and two-footed from behind, let's say hello to gorgeous George Corgan and Private Christopher Waffles. How are we doing, chaps? Are we well?
Yes, very well, thank you, Taylor. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm all right. Yeah, the sun's come back out again. It was snowing earlier on, which is good for me. But the sun's come out now and it's quite nice.
There's been snow, there's been hail, there's been sun.
It's a bit like that crowded house on Four Seasons in One Day. That's what it's been.
It is a bit like that, yeah. No, I'm feeling quite chipper. I've been out and about. I went to Hartlepool at the weekend, so I sat and watched a match there, so that felt kind of quite good fun. Nice to see them playing well. And I think we're sort of contemplating lockdown sort of ending kind of thing now, aren't we, really?
Yeah.
So it feels a bit more real.
It's on the horizon, isn't it? And also some fans back into grounds and stuff for event testing and all that sort of thing. So we're getting closer, aren't we? Chris, how are you doing? Are you well?
Yes, I'm not too bad, thank you. I'm not too bad. I have a bit of an issue with you referring to Newcastle's display is poor. I think that's extremely generous, but we'll get on to that.
I think it's generous to call it a display, isn't it? It wasn't a display of anything, was it?
I mean, it's generous to call it a game of football.
Yes,
but come on, this makes us happy. Chris is fast taking on my mantle as miserabilist. Did you hear the eagerness in his voice there as he leapt upon a little bit of negativity?
That's it. I've got something that I can moan about.
I'm deplorable, that's what I am. I'm deplorable.
You are, you absolutely.
You are.
Well, what I will say, though, a little bit of positive news for the North East. Well done, Hebburn Town Football Club, for their win in the FA Vars Monday. Fantastic result. Beating Concert.
Hebburn is a place on earth.
Indeed it is. Wonderful stuff. And also great to see the scenes on Facebook and on Twitter and stuff of the bus coming back to Hebburn to the sports club and seeing all those fans there gathered. It would be lovely to win something, wouldn't it, lads? Even just if it was the FA Vars.
it was a proper game of football, though. Like, it was really entertaining. It was exciting, entertaining. And actually, I felt really, of all of the events that are going on at the minute in terms of return of fans and things like that, how they couldn't have had at least a few thousand, because Hebburn and Concert may never get back to that sort of stage, or certainly
exactly,
for a long period
exactly.
of time. I thought of all the events that they should have had fans there for that, because it's just it was a wonderful occasion.
In a stadium that size, we could have certainly dealt with that, couldn't we? We could have had a few fans in there. Anyway, well, before we crack on and get ourselves stuck into the meat of this week's podcast, I've just got enough time to tell you about the latest offer from The Athletic. So you can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, Chris and George. George, start with you. We got anything interesting on the horizon? Anything coming up?
I did do a big piece about Hartlepool. That's why I was there. Mm. So that, as we record, that has kind of just gone up today. That was fun. I went down to interview Dave Challoner, the manager who, if you remember,
had the long throw.
As a player, was famous. That's correct. Yeah. He still has his Guinness World Record certificate on his wall in his garage, which I was very pleased
Incredible.
To Very pleased to hear about. I've got a Guinness World Record. Did you know that? This is a true story.
Oh, really? Go on then.
because I took part in the virtual London Marathon last year, and I think it was the biggest virtual marathon ever or something. So I've got signed certificates.
That's not your world record. That doesn't count as the same as this. Is having the world log throwing.
Excuse me, Chris. I'm just opening my Guinness World Record official participant. Dear participant, right, I'm reading this out now. Participated in the following record event. The most users to run a remote marathon in 24 hours is 37,966 and was achieved by the Virgin Money London Marathon on 4th of October 2020. Dear participant, I'm delighted to present you with this certificate of participation to recognise your important contribution to this Guinness World Records title.
And I bet that's framed above your bed, is it, George? You got that framed?
It's going to be. Yeah. It is going to be framed in my office.
And Chris will have his.
Cheeky get.
Chris will have his for excessive sausage consumption just next to the
most meat ever ingested by one human being in one day. Have you ever thought of doing one of those like hot dog eating competitions?
Hot dogs aren't. That's not proper meat. If it's a crap hot dog, that's not proper meat.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
This has taken us. This has taken us in the direction I didn't want to go.
There we go. So,
anyway, I wrote about Hartlepool, so that was good.
Chris, what about you? Other than stamping on everyone's dreams, anything you've been up to this week?
Well, again, being miserable primarily. So we're going to discuss it a bit later on. But yeah, Miguel Almirón, sort of how he summarizes or sort of sums up the way that this team's playing at the minute. Unsure exactly what's happening with him, where he should fit in, whether the system suits him or whether he's just shoehorned in. So I've done a piece on him after the Arsenal game, and then also a piece which is going up tomorrow or when this podcast comes out on the Thursday, looking at the sort of defensive situation, the fact that Newcastle have three players who, as things stand, are going to be out of contract next month, which is Fabian Scher, Paul Dummett and Federico Fernandez. But two of them, Newcastle have the option to extend their contracts. They haven't done so yet, sort of looking at why, the bizarre sort of situation with the general centre-back situation. Because Steve Bruce has wanted to sign a centre-back ever since he's arrived, and he's not signed one yet. Not because he hasn't tried, but he hasn't been able to. And so, yeah, sort of looking at that and basically how Newcastle need to restructure that area of the team.
Well, there you go. Excellent. So get yourself onto theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and take advantage of that special 40% off discount. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Right then, chaps. Actually, Chris, before we go any further, that Miguel Almirón piece that you wrote was very good. I read that earlier on. And don't take this the wrong way, but I did read it while I was on the toilet and I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I think thank you very much. I think that's the way to respond to that.
I think that's the best way to read Chris's articles if there's anyone out there. You know, like if you got a serving suggestion on the side of a sauce or something like that, yeah. Anyway, well then, chaps, Arsenal game. Drab and dreary, wasn't it? Very little energy out there for Newcastle. 2-0 defeat. And we've kind of gone back to our old ways, haven't we, George? We sucked ourselves deep into our own box and sat there and waited for the inevitable, didn't we?
Oh, I'm so annoyed with myself for looking forward to it.
I know. That was the worst part, wasn't it? Because there was that little bit of positivity and you think, come on, something good today, and then
I put a fiver on us to win like 2-0 or 2-1 or something. It was like, oh, God. But I'm annoyed at myself, but I'm sort of, you know, it wasn't my fault. You know, the way they set out, oh, God, you know, here's an Arsenal team who, dreadful run of form,
yeah,
really, in the league. I mean, they're a very average side. They've got this European, you know, fixture. They'd had a game on the Thursday night. He's made all those changes, eight changes, and they've got this game coming up.
Yeah.
And it's a massive game for them. I mean, I'm not saying that the Premier League was an afterthought for them, but I think they have to do something in this game.
They were there for the take and George, really, weren't they? They were. Let's be
honest. That's what I'm sort of saying. I mean, I know it's easier said than done. And again, it was that Newcastle that are passive, that sit back, that invite the opposition onto them. What that does is it gives teams the chance to create their own momentum. I mean, so whether it's Sheffield United, you know, famously giving them their first victory, it invites another team to sort of do what they want, to play themselves into form. And, you know, it shouldn't be that. You look at the players that Newcastle had on the pitch. I was actually sort of quite excited seeing that lineup. seeing Callum Wilson sort of back in there. And there are a lot of attacking players on the pitch, a lot of players who've been playing well, been playing up the park and doing it to sort of some decent effect. But it was just miserable again. It really was. It was properly rubbish.
That system has worked pretty well in recent weeks, Chris, hasn't it? But it was hugely ineffective against that Arsenal team.
It was, and what frustrates me about Newcastle is that you can tell after 5 minutes what was going on. They weren't going to get any better, and that's the sort of team they are, and you just know.
Spot on.
And I want to apologise to everyone.
Smell it a mile off.
I want to apologise to everyone because I was back at St James's Park, and as I've already said a few weeks ago, my record is shocking this season. Yeah. So this was basically there for everyone to see. I mean, I want to echo sort of what George said, and it was frustrating listening to Steve Bruce after the game, and I understand why Newcastle fans were getting annoyed at him, because he kept on talking about, oh, Arsenal, really good team. Like, well, they're not a really good team.
No.
Arsenal 10 years ago were really good. This Arsenal are bang average. It was a nuisance to them, this game. They made eight changes. You've seen all people say this is a reserve team, but still a good team. So it is their reserve team. They made eight changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of them won't play in the Europa League. But then also we just didn't play well enough, and why didn't you play well enough? What can you improve upon? And I agree with you about the system, and look, it has worked to a degree over the last few weeks, but also if you think about it, for large parts of Liverpool game, that could and should have been far behind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Burnley, they got battered for 50 minutes and then turned it around when Alan Saint-Maximin came on. So it's not as if it's suddenly fixed all of the issues that are there. And in some ways, I didn't understand why it didn't change during the game earlier on. You could see it wasn't working. You could see that the wing back, were getting exposed defensively over and over again. I felt sorry for Jacob Murphy because it's not his position, but over and over again, Martinelli just had him on toast.
The second goal, wasn't it? Was a prime example of that, wasn't it? He was sucked inside and left a massive gap behind him. And
exactly, the first goal was the other side. It was between Dummett and Richie. Neither of them got near it. And it was Arsenal didn't even have to play that well. And then when Newcastle did switch in the second half, they switched to 4-4-2 eventually. And then for some reason, Sean Longstaff's playing right wing. Almiron's playing in the middle. Then he brings on Joe Linton on the right wing. It's like, what was... And then Gail comes on. It was like throw all the forwards onto the pitch. So it was just really frustrating.
That's the accumulation of players, Chris. Eventually, if you play everybody...
Sneak another two on, they might not notice. You know, we might end up with 17 players on the pitch and still get beat. But it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason, you know, there's a reason why Newcastle are where they are on the table. I mean, and so, they're inconsistent. They're an inconsistent team, and there's inconsistency in the players. I mean, I think the thing is, when a couple of them have an off day, then chances are Newcastle are going to lose. I mean, I think that's just the way it is. But it's also about how they set out and how they start games. And, as Chris said, it's a great point that you can almost tell from the kickoff it's going to be... And I know that they've scored a lot of late goals, but, you know, those days when they sit off like that, that's attitude. You know, that's an attitude problem. I don't think that's a form problem or a fitness problem. It's an attitude. You have to, you know, and I just do not understand how they can kind of go out like that. I mean, I suppose one thing to say is that it wouldn't be a new situation if, the team have got to this point where they're pretty much safe. I know it's not mathematically so, but it's, you know,
do you think
really,
they're almost on the beach, George? Do you think they've got the flip-flops in yet? Or do you think we're not quite there?
That point that Isaac Hayden made, I can't remember if we played that clip, but certainly in the interview I did with him, you know, he talked about that sort of mentality at the club where you get enough to be safe and switch off. And, you know, that didn't go down very well with the club, but he had a good point that there has to be, in some ways it's human nature, I guess, that, you know, you have all this tension, you have that sort of relegation looming over you, and you get to a point where the other teams are losing and you've kind of kept picking up points, and I'm sure it does take away sort of a lot of the adrenaline, but that's not what you want for your football team, for your football club. And again, Hayden made the point that you want to be a team that sort of gets to, well, how many points Newcastle have, 36 points, and then pushes for 40, then pushes for 45, then pushes for 50. That has to come, you know, that has to be part of the whole club driving to get better. And we know that that drive is not there. I mean, they would argue against that, but I don't really care. I mean, we know it's not there. So, I mean, I hope it's not that. But it certainly had that smell about it, didn't it?
Chris, we're saying Arsenal aren't in great shape at the minute. They've lost a few games and stuff like that, and they've not played brilliantly. But what they do have on their side, and in that midfield in particular, is a bit of youthful exuberance, don't they? And Elneny, who scored the goal, and Martinelli, and also Martin Odegaard as well. They're busy little players. They get around the pitch. They cover a lot of ground. And in direct comparison to that, we had John Joe Shelby and Sean Longstaff, who were struggling to cover the ground. I thought on Sunday, I thought they really struggled, and I thought Shelby in particular looked very immobile. I don't know if he's maybe suffering a little bit with his fitness, but I just don't think he was at the races.
No, I thought that Newcastle, for most of the players, I thought that they were really struggling in terms of they didn't look at it. I don't know if they were physically tired or what it was, but they did in the midfield wise that they did really struggle. They completely got the pressing from Arsenal. Well, Arsenal didn't even really press, sorry, but Newcastle just sort of let them have it. And David Luiz for the first goal was just given the freedom to just roam forward with the ball. And if that's what you're doing 5 minutes into the game, then what are you going to be like 15, 20? 60 minutes into the game, and that was exactly the issue that there was, and it was so frustrating. And I do worry about the balance of that midfield, and I do think that it's very much set up seemingly to benefit John Joe Shelby. That's the way that it looks. That's the way that it seems to me. Strangely, actually, Steve Bruce, when he first came into Newcastle, wanted to play with essentially this system. When the first two games of last season, he played 3-5-2.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's
and then he abandoned it because they were so bad. They got turned over at Norwich. They actually played against Arsenal that very first game. And they've now gone back to it, and they had some short-term success with it, but I still just don't know if the balance is quite right. I don't know if there's enough athleticism in the middle, and it did feel like that Arsenal just weren't pushed and challenged at all and weren't pressed, so they were given up just so much time to do what they wanted.
That's right. Also, Fabian Scher, George, back in the team, came back returning from injury, played himself in 8 minutes or so, I think he lasted on the pitch, eight or nine minutes, and then a straight red card. Bit of a mad one, that, wasn't it? There's some people saying it shouldn't have been a red, though. What was your take on that?
I think it was probably a red.
He was a bit reckless, wasn't he? I think, rather than dangerous.
I didn't think it was a red. I mean, I think he's rash and he's reckless usually. And that was an example. No. That's what Fabian Scher is usually.
Sorry. Okay.
I didn't think it was. I mean, it was late, but I didn't think it was dangerous. I didn't think it was that bad. I don't agree where people go, oh, we should have gone to VAR and got overturned. It's one of those ones where the referees made the decision. But I think it was a little bit harsh in terms of red card. It was definitely a yellow.
But everything's looked at. Everything's looked at. So that'll have been looked at as well.
Yeah, but I don't think it should be overturned in that sense, because although I don't think it's necessarily a red card, it's a subjective decision in that sense.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mentioned this in the commentary. Do you not think that if the ref had given a yellow, then VAR wouldn't have been able to say that was a clear and obvious mistake and wouldn't have overturned it and turned it into a red? Because I think if the ref had given a yellow, I don't think anyone would have batted an eyelid.
No, but that's the way I think VAR should. That's where I think there's a lot of room for VAR to improve, but I don't agree with that to one of the issues of it, because some decisions are subjective, and so it's not a clear and obvious error either way. It's one of the ones that you see is sort of borderline either side. And so that, for me, is sort of VAR work to an extent, because otherwise you are re-refereeing the game and you are having the VAR tell the referee to do something else.
Right, so to sort of try and explain what I meant, what I mean by it's a red, I think in the way it's interpreted at the minute, I don't think there can be any complaints. I don't think there can be many complaints about that being a red card. I don't view that as a travesty of justice. I mean, I think there were other challenges. I think by the standards of that challenge, there were other challenges in the game that could have been red cards.
Yeah.
So I take that sort of on board. But, when kind of Steve Bruce talks afterwards saying you can't make a tackle now and all that, I do have sympathy for that sort of general old school kind of argument. At the same time, I just don't look at that challenge and think it was a travesty of justice. I think Shaw was stupid for me.
Oh, he was massively stupid. Massively stupid. But I mean, Granit Xhaka could have had his second yellow for body checking Sean Longstaff as well. Yeah. And you know, sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. It's just one of those things. Okay, well, are we ready to move on, chaps?
Yes, let's park that game and hopefully never ever have to come back to it.
Absolutely right. Okie dokie. Looking ahead, Leicester next up on the horizon for Newcastle United. It's my sort of opinion. I don't know how you chaps feel about this. I like Leicester City. I like the way the club is, and I like the sort of feeling that they have around the club. I think Leicester should be the kind of model for teams like Newcastle United, who are, you know, who've got eyes on that top half, or should have eyes on that top half. You know, they're a well-run club. You know, players coming through from the academy, shrewd transfer business, good coach and all that sort of stuff. But I think Leicester could be Leicester should be the blueprint, shouldn't they, surely, for teams wanting to get in the top 10?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, great stadium, spent a lot of money on their training ground, got a good forward-thinking manager. Their record on the transfer market's been pretty good, and they've kept their supporters on board very well, and so on and so forth. I mean, yeah, in those terms, they should be a model for upwardly mobile football clubs, but
absolutely.
Guess who that rules out?
Do you think that Brendan Rodgers has still got like that life-size portrait of himself on the wall? You know, they had when he was at Liverpool.
Without a doubt.
Don't we all have one of those?
George, I imagine yours is you just dressed head to toe in tweed with like a hunting dog next to you with a rifle cocked over your arm.
Excuse me?
A cocked rifle, George. Have you never cocked a rifle in your life?
All right. No. I've had a rifle cocked before, but I had to go to the doctor.
No, fair play. Do some penicillin.
I'll get taken out.
Excellent. Well, Leicester are a good team, Chris, aren't they? You know, they play some good football. They've got some very, very decent players, especially in that midfield and up front. I mean, what can Bruce change? What can Newcastle do differently going into this one?
Yes, well, they've dismantled Newcastle three times during the Bruce era so far.
Yeah, they have.
I mean, it's 5-0 away last season. It was 3-0 at home, and that 3-0 could and should have been a lot more. And then it was 2-1 earlier this season, but that scoreline flatters Newcastle. Andy Carroll came on and made a big difference. But James Maddison has run the game against Newcastle the last few times. The midfield is the issue. We were discussing it before in terms of what went wrong against Arsenal. That's what concerns me for this match. I'd like to see someone like, I mean, ideally, obviously, Isaac Hayden's not fit, but someone like him. So maybe someone like Matty Longstaff, who can get in and around, who can cause problems, who can try and disrupt in the midfield, because there wasn't enough of that against Arsenal. And maybe Newcastle need that freshen up. Maybe this side, they've got to that stage and maybe they have relaxed a little bit, which is sort of human nature. Maybe the adrenaline's gone a little bit. Bring in someone with a point to prove, be that Matty Longstaff or someone like that. Point to prove, but also energy and ability to be Terrier-like in midfield. I think that's what Newcastle need.
Definitely. I would definitely agree with that. And I mean, that midfield, that just needs that. Just needs that bit of enthusiasm, doesn't it? That energy, that, you know, that, what's the word? That sort of verve, somebody who's going to go in there and stick the foot in a bit and, you know, carry the team forward as well. George, it's an interesting one with Callum Wilson and Alisson Maximin up front at the minute. That partnership, do you think that could be the way to go forward, or do you think that's probably going to be another thing that gets rotated?
I can't see that it'll get rotated. I mean, Steve Bruce has spent most of this season kind of lamenting the fact that he hasn't had the two of them to play together, and that was only one game. So I think, you know, and he's again consistently said that they're his best players and we've missed our best players, etc., etc. So I would imagine that they're going to stay in the team for now. It does feel like it needs a shake-up again. I mean, it's interesting when you think back to previous times when they've, using sort of a lot of the same players, how they can get most of them, you know, in the kind of latter days of Benitez, when Shelvey wasn't in the team, they had Hayden and Sean Longstaff sort of in those kind of central midfield positions. And they had Shart, who was able to come out and sort of fill the kind of Shelvey role, which is spraying long passes if necessary. And that was the best that, you know, Hayden and Longstaff have played for Newcastle. and that there was a protection for the defence there. But obviously, that's, you know, for injury and suspension reasons, that's not something that can be done. I mean, Chelvey on that sort of display, it's, you know, I know it's already a question for loads and loads of people about how he stayed in the team, but he's so deep and you know, he's so slack for some of Arsenal's you know, for Arsenal's first goal in particular. And I realise I'm now getting back onto okay. Arsenal, but it does feel
sometimes
like
you have to go back.
It does feel like, but I can't see Wilson and St Maximin being broken up unless there's an injury there.
With that in mind, Chris, how do we fit Joe Linton into this, and or does he fit into this? Because he's not going to play as one of that midfield three, and he isn't going to play as one of the wing backs either, is he? He would play as a striker. Do you think that's him on the bench for this foreseeable?
Well, right winger, as he came on against Arsenal. I do see him as being on the bench. I mean, more of a pressing issue for me, as I wrote about, is Miguel Almirón. I mean, Miguel Almirón is currently in the team, but I think if he's going to be in the team, then he needs to be playing further forward. I don't think, if you're playing Miguel Almirón, don't play him as a midfielder. And that role's changed slightly at certain points. He has been, I mean, away at Liverpool, he was almost like a left winger because it became almost like a 5-4-1. But he's not part of a midfield three, particularly a midfield three which contains Jonjo Shelvey, and so therefore you probably need the other two to be doing a fair bit of running. Yeah. Then I don't understand why Miguel Almirón's there, because he buzzes around, he works hard, but he's not someone who passes the ball on quickly. He takes several touches in the middle and it actually slows the attacks going forward. Even though he's a quick player and you think of him quick counter-attack, and he actually slows that up because he's not getting high enough off the pitch. He can't release players as he was doing when he was playing as a false nine, or when he was playing as a number 10 when they played 4-2-3-1. So I would like to see, if he is going to play Almirón, almost switch the system so that Almirón becomes part of a front three or just two behind the striker, like the almost the end of the Rafa Benitez era, where he was playing there with Perez behind Rondon. Yeah. Do that with Sam Maximin behind Wilson and see if that works. Because at the minute, I just don't see why he's in the team in that position that he's in.
As a double pivot number 10, Chris, is that where you want him to play?
Exactly, yeah. As a double pivot number 10.
Yeah, of course. It always comes back to that with you, doesn't it? Well, determined to push that into regular conversation, aren't you? Yeah, amazing foresight. Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, Leicester, Leicester have got some good pace in behind on the break and stuff like that. That midfield are a bit tenacious, and they've also got some guile and some craft in there as well. If Jamie Vardy's firing, you know, you can be in danger pretty quickly just from a quick ball over the top. So Newcastle are going to have to be, they're going to have to be really careful. But we don't play a particularly high line, do we, Chris? Which is where Jamie Vardy tends to get a lot of his goals from, which is running in behind and stuff like that. When you're camped on the edge of your own 6-yard box, it's quite difficult to give that kind of goal away, isn't it?
Yeah, they don't play particularly. I mean, I have tried to move slightly further up the pitch in recent weeks, and actually Bruce was saying that he wanted Newcastle to be higher last week, but I think that more of a concern for me is if Leicester try and do what Arsenal did and try and exploit the gaps behind the wing-backs and the back three, because it did look like Dummett and Fernandez either side were struggling to get across, never mind the fact that Richie and Murphy are not natural defenders as it is, then covering out wide, those defenders being dragged out wide, there was an issue there. And if Leicester do that to Newcastle, then I would worry for them. And Vardy is very clever in the way that he runs, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him drifting out wide as well as trying to get through the middle.
Trying to find those gaps.
Yeah, exactly. The good strikers find space anyway, and they know how to pull defenders out of position and make space for others and things like that. I mean, what I would hate is for it to be an excuse, you know, for Vardy to be an excuse for Newcastle to sit back again.
Because
it's not like they need an excuse to do that, but you hope it's not, because exactly as Chris says, Arsenal showed that it doesn't matter how much you sit back, good teams will find a way through you. And Leicester have good players across the pitch. You don't want to sort of encourage them to play, you know, you can defend and be aggressive, you can defend and press, you can do all those things, but you know, Newcastle on last week's kind of performance don't do anything. I mean, that's the thing, they don't do anything, they don't get any face, they're just passive and sit back, and it just invites defeat.
Interesting though, George, isn't it, the the noise around Steve Bruce and the pressure that he was under has lifted over the last few weeks, hasn't it, with those results and that little run of form that we've had. Do you think in the summer that could be something that is revisited? Do you think that's something that will still be on his mind or on the club's mind? Is he likely to, you know, continue on next season from what you know?
Well, it's a good question, and yeah, I'm sure you're asking because there's been reports that Newcastle are looking at Gennaro Gattuso. The Napoli manager sort of breaking. I mean, you know, there's a few things to say here. I mean, they were very, very definitive after Brighton that Bruce was, you know, was not going anywhere mm-hmm. at a time when a lot of clubs would have finally taken the decision to switch things up, and they didn't do that. And that certainly had a, you know, we saw that it had an effect in terms of results, and certainly sort of within the club, within the dressing room, at least it sort of got people behind the idea that nothing was going to change, and so they sort of had to get on with it. And so, you know, I'm not saying that was the right decision or the wrong decision, but it was an important decision or non-decision, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I think speaking from the outside, you would say it would be a strange thing to do to keep him at that point and then change things and then, in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't sort of quite see that logic. But the, and, you know, all the usual things apply. He's under contract. He signed an initial three-year mm-hmm. contract. Yep. There's still another year to run. The longer that goes on, the more compensation Newcastle would have to pay. Mm-hmm. And with a takeover lingering, we know that Newcastle don't want to spend money. You know, they don't want to spend money. And, you know, going through that process of bringing in getting rid of one manager, bringing in another one, would be an expensive business. So
yes.
You then draw, you know, the thing that, the sort of wild card, I suppose, is Steve Bruce's own view when he gets to the end of this season, whether he wants to put himself, you know, through that anymore. And in terms of, you know, do I need this? Do I need the hassle?
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had fans in the stadium, obviously, this season, but certainly the noise outside has been pretty hostile, and that's, you know, that's a reflection of results, not anything else. And, you know, do I need that equally? You know, so could something be done there? I mean, again, you would hope that the club would have a discussion about that with him and what they might do. I mean, but I don't think those discussions have happened yet. I mean, from stuff that I've heard, I don't think that's been something that they've come to any decisions on or anything like that. I might be wrong, but I certainly don't think that. And we know that from the way Newcastle have acted in the past, they don't have people lined up. They don't line people up. So that's what I know. I don't know what Chris thinks.
Yeah, I think that almost Bruce's own position and how he feels is probably more of a determining factor here than anything else. I don't see Newcastle pushing to make a change unless there is someone who they seemingly have liked for quite a while, and then they decide that they're the person to take them forward. I mean, maybe you need to look at whether, I mean, the concern, and I wrote this over the international break, was that at that point, this was before they had the mini revival, but I still can't see Steve Bruce standing in front of, if we allowed a full St. James's Park by August, which I hope we are, I still can't see him standing on the touchline and why that's going to have attracted fans back and what the idea is, what vision that is going to portray going forward, because there has been no progress this year, and that will be more than 2 years into his time. And if they don't start well next season, that's such negative momentum, and there's nothing that Steve Bruce can fall back on. So I find it difficult still to visualise that, but equally, as George said, because they're pushed through that period when that initially happened, I can't see them rushing to make a change unless they were of the opinion is we're not going to change during the season. This is the person to take us forward, but we're going to wait till the summer to bring them in. That's the only way I could see Newcastle changing and making that change. Obviously, takeover and that situation dependent.
Right then, let's move on, chaps. We're going to go and dip back into our archives. An iconic moment in the history of Newcastle United. Something which lives long in the memory. Here we go, listen to this.
When you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds, And when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that. But I'll tell you, you can tell him now, if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Oh, my God. The hairs still go up on my arms and on the back of my neck listening to that. 25 years ago.
I had a cock rifle listening to that.
Outstanding. Oh, man, just the pure passion coming off the man. You've got to admire it, haven't you? I know things didn't go our way that year, let's be honest, but my God, yeah, no, I loved it.
Love it.
Oh, you've got to love it. You have to love it. The old, Chris, the old myth that it was mind games by Fergie and that Keegan finally flipped and exploded. I'm not sure about that, are you? It's a bit of a misnomer, I think, that it was mind games.
I don't think it was mind games. I mean, the league had already gone by that stage. It was already, yeah. It was really the final throws of it. You use the word emotion, and I think that's exactly, that just typifies Kevin Keegan and his style of management. It does. The type of bloke he is. That is him. Yeah, exactly. Heart and sleeve, saying as, and he felt wronged by what happened. He didn't like the comments. I mean, he was just being honest. I don't think it was so much mind games, this idea that was where Newcastle lost the league. Newcastle lost the league, as we discussed a few weeks ago, when they couldn't beat Man United at home, even though they had dominated the game. And Peter Schmeichel had a wonderful, world-class performance at the other end. Eric Cantona scored the goal. That's where they started to lose the league. By this stage, it was already gone. That's just Kevin Keegan letting that passion out. And so defending his club and his players as well. And so that's what he was fiercely proud of that side. And that was him showing that in what he was saying there.
I've spoken to a couple of the players from that team as well and said, you know, what sort of effect did that have on the team at the time? And the players, all of them to a man, have said that they absolutely loved it when he did that. They thought it was amazing, George. It just shows you, doesn't it? The perception of it from the outside is not always the way it's taken by the team.
Yeah, and I mean, really, what a manager says on Sky Sports straight after a game, I mean, does that really, you know, does that then really have an effect on anybody else? I mean, the point is, Man United were an absolute machine at that point. Yeah. I mean, they were winning every week. I mean, it's true to say that Newcastle had a huge lead, and if they'd, you know, if they'd kind of kept winning every week, they'd have won it. But Manchester United, I might be wrong, but it's something like they, in all competitions, they lost one game in out of 21. I mean, and they won all the rest of them.
I mean, it's
something
nonsense,
like that.
Isn't it?
There was, yeah, I mean, it was, it's something like that. Yeah. They just won every week for 5 months. And that was it wasn't mind games, it was games. You know, it was games.
It was,
and Newcastle ran out of games and they were faltering. But I mean, I sort of listened to that, and I find it inspiring. He was sticking up for his team, and he was sticking up for the club. Well, I mean, Ferguson was a master. I hate the phrase kind of mind game because it's a cliche, but he was a master of getting under people's skin. I mean, he did do that. There's no doubt about that. Ferguson's genius was making, well, apart from being brilliant at his job, and you know, but one of his incredible skills was making Man United feel like the smallest club in the world. If you were part of that, you know, if you were part of that dressing room, they're the biggest club in the world. They were, certainly were then. But at that point, he could boil everything down to the dressing room. He would protect players no matter what. You know, people laughed at it. People criticized, but it was absolutely a deliberate ploy. You know, he would protect those players with everything he had, and he would circle the wagons. He made a way of making it feel small, and you know, Keegan responded to that. He did it. He was all heart. That's what he was. He responded like that. But I mean, it had gone by that point.
It had.
I think we all knew that.
An incredible display of passion, wasn't it, Chris? And you know, probably one in this day and age of media training and, you know, press officers jumping in and stuff like that. It's probably unlikely to ever be seen again or repeated, is it? Something like that?
Well, I think, Keegan's a unique character in so many ways. So I think, regardless, it's unlikely to be repeated in that sort of sense. You do have some characters in different sort of senses. You hear Jurgen Klopp say different things and a few managers like that, but I just think Keegan's a one-off, and even if, that's why I think he would struggle a little bit in terms of dealing with with those sort of situations now if he was still managing now, because I don't think that he can be media managed. I don't think he wants to be. He wants to be on it. That's just how he is. He's, as you said before, horn on sleeve, says what comes to his mind, says what he wants, and in terms of, and so yeah, I certainly don't think we're going to see it in that sort of sense again, where someone live on TV in that situation gives it the rant, quite like the Love It rant. But it'll go down history, and rightly so. As you say, other people see it in different sort of ways, but I think for Newcastle fans, as painful as some of the memories are that it evokes, I think it's also taken on a special place, because as we say, it's him defending the club, it's him defending his players, and that's what he stood for, and that's why he was so adored.
I feel nothing but
pride. That was losing.
I was going to say, George, I feel nothing but pride when I see that clip. I feel absolutely nothing but pride.
If that's losing, who wants to win?
Exactly. Perfect stuff. Right, let's move on, lads. It's quiz time. And
I'd like to win. I would actually like to win. Can I just
Can we please win? Are you going to win the quiz this week, George?
Can we just win? No, of course not. No, of course not. And you've done something stupid, which means
I've done something stupid. I'm trying to keep things fresh. I'm changing things up.
I know, but
I've thrown a cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah, but you've made it a test of reflexes as well as intelligence. So I can't remember.
And you have neither of those things. Is that what you're saying?
And I'm old. So I'm just going to sit here in silence while Chris romps to a victory. Easy victory.
Well then,
I have no doubt about that.
Well, I shall explain after this. I'm going to just introduce the quiz now. This week, the great Newcastle United pub quiz is back, and we are coming to you live from Tilly's Bar.
Oh, nice.
You know Tilly's?
Yeah.
A fabulous pub in the middle of Newcastle, next door to the Opera House, and a great selection of beers, ales, spirits and everything else that you can imagine. A wonderful, wonderful pub, and somewhere that I shall be visiting as soon as opening indoors is allowed again, and we can get out of this lockdown and go for a good old beer. I love Tilly's and I can't wait to get back there. The only pub I've ever known outside of Spain that sells a beer called Alhambra Reserva. And Alhambra Reserva is a beer that gets you drunk from the feet up. It's incredible.
We could go there and then onto the Bodega as well, either way around.
Amazing.
So that'd be quite good.
I once had four bottles of Alhambra Reserva watching a Champions League semi-final and got up from my seat to go to the loo and promptly collapsed onto the floor. It was amazing. Anyway.
Excellent.
So, Tilly's is the venue for the pub quiz, and this week we've got a slightly different format. So we're going to be doing a game called Guess the Player from the teams that they have played for. It's going to include past...
Alan Shearer.
Wrong, which is your answer for everything, but in this case it is wrong. Listen to the instructions because I won't repeat them, all right? So These are going to be past and maybe present players as well. Okay, there's going to be five players. I shall read you every team that they have played for, including loan spells. Okay, but I won't tell you which ones are the loan spells. The first one to say
this
answer.
This is a new format. We've done this before.
We haven't done
No,
this
we haven't,
before.
George. You and I did this for the big Newcastle 2 quiz or whatever it's called.
Yeah, so shut your mouth and listen, all right? The first one to say the correct answer gets a point. If we are level at the end, I have a tiebreaker question. I also have an example for you. So, here we go. Here's your example. Okay?
Alan Shearer.
No, stop it. Okay? I shall read the teams. Nottingham Forest, Newcastle United, Wigan Athletic, QPR, Scunthorpe, Mansfield Town. And the answer is, Chris?
How's the bacon, did you say?
James Perch.
That is James Perch. Well done. You don't get a point for that, though. That is just the example.
Was that, hang on, what was the, how's the bacon, is that your buzzer?
That's my buzzer.
Do that again.
How's the bacon, did you say?
Okay, that's quite good. I want you to win.
Oh, man, I'm going to struggle to hear that, though. Hang on. Right, okay. Are we ready, chaps?
No.
Okay. Player number one. I shall read the teams in order that he played for them. Le Havre, Auxerre, Rangers, Newcastle United.
How's the bacon, did you say?
Going to have to go to Chris there for that one. Chris?
Jean-Alain Boumsong.
That is Jean-Alain Boumsong. There we go. Well done. 1 point to Chris. Also played for Juventus, Lyon and Panathinaikos. There we go.
Oh, Yes, Graham Souness was advised not to sign him, and then they paid. they could have had him for cheaper, and then they signed Greenwood.
He was. Yeah.
Ready, next one. Player number two. Liverpool, Southampton, Bolton Wanderers, Newcastle United, Reading.
How's the bacon, did you say?
Chris Waffles.
Danny Guthrie.
That is correct. That is Danny Guthrie.
How many of these are there?
There are five.
Just give it to Chris now. Can we all go home?
Well, if I get the next one, then I win, so...
Liverpool, Southampton, Bolton Wanderers, Newcastle United, Reading, Fulham, Blackburn Rovers, Oaken Gates Athletic, Mitra Kukar, Walsall, and
I'm going now, so
Fram.
You two can carry on, but I'm going.
No,
so
stay there. On. Don't be getting in a huff because you haven't got one. You might get the next one.
I won't. Alan Shearer.
Correct. No. player number three. George, if you get even the slightest hint of a player's name in your head, just bing in, all right? And we'll see.
Well, I did in the first one, and you went to Chris.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I was first as well.
You weren't. Here we go. Player number three. Porto, Rio Avenue, Chelsea, Vitesse.
How's the bacon, did you say?
Chris.
I'm starting to think that I was wrong because when you said Vitesse, but I'm going to go for Cristianazzo.
Yes, it is Christian Atu. Yes. Well done. There you go. Storming into a 3-0 lead.
See you later.
Didn't know you got into business. I did know, but I wouldn't have got it from that.
Okay, the next one's a little bit trickier because it starts with Newcastle United.
Great.
Okay, it starts with Newcastle United. Player number four, George. Stop greeting and bleating in the background and let's just see if you can get one. Player number four, Newcastle United. Blackpool. Bradford City. Leeds United, Sunderland, Burnley, Wigan Athletic, Birmingham City.
How's the bacon, did you say?
Oh, God. I know this, but I can't think of it. I think I know.
Is it Gary Caldwell?
Oh, it's not Gary Caldwell. I'm going to continue. Birmingham City, Toronto FC. Those are the teams.
Stephen Caldwell.
It is Stephen Caldwell. Well done, George.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have got that. I wouldn't have got that unless Chris had said
3-1. 3-1, there we go.
I wouldn't have got that.
But you did get it, George. You did get it. Don't give yourself a hard time.
Gary Caldwell.
Right.
Gary Caldwell didn't play for Sunderland, did he?
Gary Caldwell didn't play for Sunderland, no. Right. No. Last one. Player number five. Here we go. This one is an interesting one. Here we go. Bury is the first team. Newcastle United. Liverpool. Newcastle United. Cork City. And Apoel.
What?
See those again?
What? Say that again.
Bury. Newcastle United. Liverpool. Newcastle United. Cork City. And Apoel. George?
Terry McDermott?
That was Terry McDermott, yes indeed. Outstanding stuff. There we go.
I don't think I'd have got that.
Snatching. You didn't get it. You didn't get it, I got it.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory there, well done. Outstanding.
Well, that's only because you've asked me one. I mean, that's my long-term memory, that's okay.
All right, so from now on, all of them have got to be pre-1990 for you. Okay, fair play.
I should have got that a bit sooner, actually. I should have got that sooner.
There we go.
I was sort of thinking, I was thinking too modern.
So, Chris, you are the winner this week, 3-2.
Thank you, I enjoyed that. It was good.
Players' teams. The tiebreaker question, just for fun, was going to be how many senior career appearances did Stephen Caldwell make?
What, for all of his clubs?
For all of his clubs, yeah.
Oh, Christ.
213.
George?
Oh, no, he's made more than that. In all competitions?
Yep.
He made more than 213. 320.
Oh, George would have had that. 369 senior appearances across all teams. There we go.
It's a shame he'd already lost.
Jim, what did you think of the new quiz format, George? Did you enjoy it?
No.
No, didn't think so.
Thought it was an absolute waste of time.
Did anybody find out what the scores were, by the way, last week? We said we were going to, but I can't remember whether we actually found them out or not.
Oh, who cares? It's not about winning. or it's taking not. Part.
It's probably about, just as well, isn't it?
It's about having a shit time filling in dead air.
There we go. Well then, that's it. All done. Well done, Chris. Excellent work.
Thank you. Well, I enjoyed that.
No problem. Thanks, George.
No.
Okay. Oh, he's gone off in a little huff again, hasn't he? Never mind. Well, there you go. Thanks for listening, you lot. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. And visit theathletic.com/NewcastlePod for 40% off the full price of a subscription. George is off to cock his rifle. Chris is no doubt off for a victory sausage. And until next time, take care. And thanks for listening to Pod on the Time. See you later. The Athletic.